What's up, friends? All right, I am back with part four of the Higher Self Habit series, all about activation. This episode is going to give you tangible tips, the tangible know-how, the strategy of how to design behaviors, what the four components of every single behavior are, and how to make them work for your benefit. This is an episode you will not want to miss. And if you have not already listened to parts one through three, I would encourage you to do that first. I think it will help you get even more out of it.
Welcome to Inhabit with Alessia Citro, a show dedicated to helping you expand your life and inhabit your dreams. After becoming a corporate dropout and faltering, I realized that the only thing keeping me from my big vision was not taking the small, consistent actions that compound and move the needle. Together, we'll uncover and discuss the ways we stay stuck and how you can unlock your potential in 3, 2, 1.
All right, fam. Today it is part four of the Higher Self Habits series. And I have delayed on getting this to you for a number of reasons, which I will share in a bonus episode because I want to keep the focus on this. But this is the day where we put everything together. This is where the rubber meets the road and you put together what you learn in the first three parts of this series. So part one was awareness. Part two was alignment. Part three was audit. And now part four, activate, putting it all together. And this is where we actually get into behavior design. So I am actually going to flip through the manuscript as I go through this episode. And I'm also going to do this one a little differently than I usually do. I am not going to edit anything. If I mess up, you're going to hear it. You're going to hear the pages ruffling. And we're just going to roll with that because I am really working to overcome this perfectionist bullshit that I cannot seem to shake. So I'm going to just go for it imperfectly and stock that as evidence that it's okay and that I won't die. Okay, so with that, here we go. All right, so the first thing I talk about in part four of the book, which it mirrors this, part four of the book is activate. The first concept I talk about is domino habits. And domino habits is something that I stumbled upon on accident when I was creating my own good habits and stopping ones that no longer serve me. So think of when you line up dominoes and you knock one over, what happens to all the other dominoes behind it? They fall over too. So what is a habit that will help you with other subsequent habits that you either want to start or stop? So let me give you the real life example of my domino habit, which was drinking alcohol. When I was drinking, here's some of the things that were going on in my life that were tied to it. I would be shopping on Instagram, often not remembering what I was buying until it would show up at my house because I was drinking to inebriation. I often felt sluggish. I was gaining weight. I had a really hard time waking up in the morning. I didn't eat as well as I could have. I was anxious. I was on edge. I had some marital strain. I was also spending a lot of money on alcohol. So there were all of these factors that were becoming less than ideal simply because I was drinking. So what happened when I quit? Every other area of my life got better as a result because alcohol was the domino that once it fell, life was way better. Now, one thing I do want to tell you, though, I give this as an example to illustrate. However, I want you on your habits journey to start with adding a good habit versus subtracting one that's not great for you. It is much easier to add than it is to subtract. And when you add in a good habit, you are going to get that satisfaction, that success that will fuel more success, more forward momentum. And that is a great place to be when it comes time to tackle the harder stuff and subtract bad habits. So let me give you an example of a positive domino habit. Let's say you begin working out, you begin going to the gym. What's going to also happen when you do that? I am willing to bet if you're anything like me, you are eating better. You're not ordering DoorDash as much. You're drinking more water. You are sleeping better. There's all these other things that come into play once we do one positive habit. So keep this concept of domino habits in mind and think about what yours might be. We're not doing anything yet. I'm going to walk you through the basics of behavioral design first. But just remember, there are levers that you can pull in the way of these dominoes. Okay, so flipping over to the meat of this, my favorite part of habits is behavior design. And the reason I like it is because I often feel and have noticed that when either myself or clients cannot make the changes that they want to make, they look at it as if they have a character flaw, that it's their fault that they can't make themselves do this thing. I'm here to tell you, it is not a you problem. It is a behavior design problem. And so there are four components of every single behavior that becomes a habit that we can tweak and play with for you to create habits that will actually last and that you can actually stick with. So you can remember these in a very apropos acronym, which is ACTS, A-C-T-S. The A stands for ambition. Do you want to do the behavior? Do you have the ambition to do it? C is for capability. Can you do the behavior or not? More on the or not in a moment. The T is the trigger. What is the prompt or the cue that makes you do the thing, do the behavior, do the habit? And then finally, S. S is satisfaction, and that is the reward that you get from doing it. And the way that we wire in any habit is by tapping directly into our brain's reward center. So more on this here in just a moment. All right, so these go in order. Depending on the behavioral model and theory that you look at, there are others where these might be in a slightly different order. That is honestly better explored in the book where I break them down. But what I believe is the very best way to engineer your habits is to keep them in that order. So you have the desire to do it, because if you don't want to do something, the odds of you actually doing it are not so good. So we do want to have a level of ambition there. But really where we focus our efforts, we focus them on capability, number one, that is the most important factor by a mile, as well as the trigger. Until a behavior becomes automatic, the trigger in the form of the prompt or the cue to do it is paramount. No trigger, no behavior. So let's go through these in a little bit more detail. First, ambition. Let's talk about this real quick. The example I give in the book is that ambition and the motivation to do something can be very fleeting, and it can be a fair weather friend. So while we want to design behaviors that we actually have the desire to do, we don't want to bank on the desire to do them, because it can leave us when we need it the most. Here's an example every single person can relate to, either firsthand or secondhand, and that is going to the gym come January. New year, new you, right? You sign up for the gym membership, and what happens? You probably stop going. In fact, I looked up the data on this. So data from exercise apps suggests a drop off in exercise by the third week of January after a spike on the first days of the month. So if you have had a hard time sticking with a New Year's resolution, you're not alone. The motivation leaves you. And here's the other thing. You might have competing desires. For example, in January, if you're in the United States, most places it's pretty cold. So when that third week of January rolls around, are you feeling more motivated to go to the gym and to do all the things that come with it? Getting up when it's cold, maybe inside your house, scraping off the ice from your windshield? Or are you more motivated to stay in your warm and cozy bed? And it's okay if you're more motivated to stay in your warm and cozy bed. That is why these things fail and why we do not engineer our habits around ambition. We engineer them instead around capability and making it easy to do. So let's talk about what that looks like. Okay, so capability, this is my favorite part to talk about. There's so many pieces to it that we can play with, and it's largely within our control. You probably gathered this from listening to any episodes of the show and what I shared in the very beginning about perfectionism. I love to be in control of things. I do. Look, I try to relinquish as much as I can to the universe because I know it's got better plans than I do. But at the end of the day, your girl still loves to be in the driver's seat. And this is also why capability is a really good place to build your habits from, because ultimately you are the one that can control how easy or not something is. And I'll show you how that is, because there are multiple factors that we can engineer for when designing habits. So the first thing is that you need to make this as simple as possible, because any level of friction or difficulty will make you not do a behavior. This is the example I give in the book. And most things are this simple that this tiny bit of friction will keep you from doing it. So ever since I've been in high school, I have had really gnarly shoulder pain from working at a computer, from using a mouse, from typing on the keyboard, all of that, right? It came to a head recently. In fact, I would sleep on my right side and I would wake up in the middle of the night because my hand would be numb. It would have fallen asleep. So then I'd roll to the left side and then the left hand would fall asleep. And there were a couple days where I did not get feeling back. I mean, some of it, but not all of it, for like over 24 hours. And I started to get freaked out. So luckily I figured out, thanks to my wonderful husband, Jeff. So Jeff, who nearly has a PhD in kinesiology, he was a physical therapist before he got into biotech. He, like, there's nothing that this man can't do or doesn't know, it seems like. And he pointed out to me that I probably was dealing with pseudothoracic outlet syndrome because my muscles were so tight that they needed to be stretched. So how did he help me do that? Well, being a former PT, he showed me some foam rolling techniques, and some stretches that I could do to open things up. Okay, so knowing how to foam roll and actually doing it are two different things. And do you want to know the stupid thing that kept me from foam rolling? And this is like case in point of why it takes almost no difficulty for you to not do something. I would not foam roll in the morning when that was like my time to do it. That was like the part of my day it fit into. I wouldn't do it because I have long hair that I pretty much always wear down. And if I foam rolled with my hair down, it would get caught under the foam roller. And it would be really painfully pulled. So when you find yourself not doing a behavior, the question you ask yourself is, WTF, no, not the one you're thinking, where's the friction? So the friction for me was my hair getting pulled. Okay. So what could I instead do to keep my hair from getting pulled? Well, the answer is obvious. I could put it up. I could put it in a ponytail. I could clip it up. So where was the friction? Why wasn't I doing that? The answer is because I would need to walk down the hall to our bedroom, to our bathroom, where I keep hair ties and hair clips. And look, we've got a beautiful home, but it's not a sprawling estate like Versailles. That's how I describe it in the book. I mean, without exaggeration, it's probably a 15-second walk from the kitchen to the bathroom. So how do you solve for this? You keep a hair tie or a hair clip close to where you're going to foam roll, because that would remove the friction. So I began doing that. And what do you know? I began to foam roll. So there are what I call the R cube factors that will either make you able or unable to do a behavior. I call them that because they encompass three buckets. So the first R is resources. Resources include time, money, tools, knowledge and skills, and assistance. The second R bucket is rigor. So that is how much work is it to do this on a mental, physical, or emotional level. The final R of the R cubed is reach. Is this within reach of your current routine? So let's go through all of these R cubed factors one by one so that you can see how you can begin to evaluate the things that are getting in your way of doing a particular behavior. So we'll use my foam roll example here. So the first category for R is resources. So let's look at time first. Was it a time issue? It wasn't, because it takes me less than 5 minutes and I do it while I make my coffee in the morning. Easy peasy. Was it tools? No, I already had a foam roller. Was it money? No, I did not need to buy anything. Was it knowledge or skills? No, because I knew how to foam roll because Jeff had taught me. Was it assistance? Nope, I could do this on my own. But also, it bears mentioning that if you need assistance to do a behavior, this is not a behavior that I would try to make a habit, because there's someone else involved and that's going to be out of your control. Okay, so it was not a resource problem. How about a rigor problem? So was it the amount of physical rigor? And it was. The physical rigor, and I kind of laugh as I say this, because is it rigorous to walk from my kitchen 15 seconds down the hall to my bathroom to get a hair tie? No, but it did present enough physical rigor to be the issue that was making this not easy enough. Now, it just added a tiny bit of friction, but that's all that it takes. And I just want to like sidebar and like underscore here. I think oftentimes we don't give ourselves enough grace for these tiny little pieces of friction really throwing things off. We think that, oh, like that's so easy. Like I should be able to get myself to do that. But I tell my clients all the time, stop shoulding on yourself. Stop shoulding on yourself. You have enough going on, enough plates you're spinning. A tiny bit of friction is all that it takes to keep you from doing something. So it might be as simple as this when it comes to capability and why you're not doing something. So let's run through the rest of the factors. There's just a few more, just so that you can see the troubleshooting process here. Okay, so how about mental rigor and the foam rolling example? Well, if I was not married to Jeff, a former physical therapist who taught me and showed me how to do these foam rolling techniques, this also would have been an obstacle, because I would have had to go online. I would have had to find the stretches. I would have had to watch the videos. I would have had to try to figure out if I was doing them correctly or not without anyone to tell me if that was in fact the case. So this would have played into if it hadn't been for Jeff. How about emotional rigor? No. And this is not always going to apply, but let me give you an example of how it can. A habit I would love to put into practice is breath work. I have not made breath work a habit because emotions come up every time. And quite frankly, I usually don't want to deal with them. I don't feel like I have the time to deal with them. And I don't do it. So if something is emotionally rigorous, it could even be, let me give you another example. I sent off an email today that I had been delaying. I need to withdraw from a program I'm in because I just don't have the time for it. And I have delayed and delayed and delayed doing this because emotionally it makes me feel like shit to decline and go back on commitments that I've made. But sometimes you need to do it. So emotional rigor can really be a big one when it comes to not doing something. Okay, and then finally, is foam rolling in reach of my current routine? So yes, because I do it in the same room. We have like a huge kitchen family room adjoined into a great room. So I do it in the same place that I make the coffee, like 10 yards away. Hi, Mila.
Hi, Mila.
How's it going? Oh, I love you. Mila, so I'm sick with the cold today. Yeah. Yeah, and you're being so good while I record.
And today is school, so I can't go to school today because I'm sick. Mm. But I feel sad today because today is French club that I'm going to miss.
I know, you're missing French club, but you can go next week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, I'll be out in just a little bit, okay, sweetie?
Okay.
I love you. Oh, my God, she's so sweet. So this is in reach of my current routine because I am already in that room and the coffee's brewing. Like, what else am I going to do in those 5 minutes? Let me give you examples of where this would have fallen out of the current routine. So, let's say that I'm in the habit of, waking up, making coffee, and immediately going into my office to start working. And I just couldn't get myself to foam roll in the morning while the coffee was brewing for whatever reason. Well, maybe this would be a habit better inserted into another part of my day in another routine. So it's foam rolling. So maybe I do this while I'm at the gym, or maybe I do it before bed or something like that. So you need to find the pocket of your day that things will fit, because if it's causing you to upset the apple cart and do something in a much different order than you're used to, it's probably not going to get wired in. It could, but again, you're just adding that level of friction. So as you can see, these are all factors that can keep you from being able to do something. I will say physical and mental rigor can be pretty easy to solve for. Let me give you an example. This is in the book too. So let's use the example of lifting weights, since we're on the note of the gym. Let's say you want to bench press 200 pounds. Well, you got to work up to that, right? It would be too physically rigorous for you to do that out of the gate. So what could you do? You could start with maybe just bench pressing the bar, which is like 45 pounds, or maybe it's bench pressing some dumbbells that are lighter. Working up and making things less rigorous to start with. So starting really, really small and then getting stronger. If it's mental rigor, how could you make it less complex? Can you break it into smaller pieces? Can you take it in like bite-sized chunks, make it simple? What can you do to make it less complicated? And this coming from someone who tends to overcomplicate most things. Also, sometimes rigor factors can be solved with resources. So this is a really good example. Let's say you want to bench press, and you can bench press 200 pounds, but you have a really bad callus that's come open and it's physically painful for you to bench press right now. Well, here's where the resource of a tool in the form of weightlifting gloves might be something that could allow you to continue bench pressing. So if something is too hard, is there a tool to physically hard? Is there a tool to make it easier? And so on. All right. So whenever you are looking at friction, or whenever you're looking at a habit or behavior that you want to be doing that you're not, look at what's making it difficult. Ask yourself, WTF, where's the friction? And then run through those R cubed resource rigor and reach factors. So again, they are time, money, tools, skills, knowledge, assistance. Then there's mental, physical, emotional rigor. And then finally, is it in reach of your current routine? All right, let's move on to trigger. So the third component of every single behavior is the trigger, or what prompts or cues you to act. This could also be the opportunity presenting itself for you to choose or make a choice. I said this in the beginning, but I'm going to say it again. Until your habit becomes wired in and automatic, you've got to have a trigger. And let me give you a really good example of why this is. Let's say that you are expecting a package and you have to sign for it. Well, let's go through these four factors. So you are outside in your backyard gardening, and the delivery guy comes to the door, rings the doorbell to get the signature, but you don't hear it because you're in the backyard. So you had the ambition to answer the door. You wanted to answer it. You wanted to get the package. You had the capability of answering the door. You were home. You were there. You could have. And you would have had the satisfaction of getting that package. You really wanted it, but you missed the trigger. And so you could not perform the behavior of opening the door. This is something that we don't utilize enough. Most of the time we think, oh, I should be able to remember that. This is something I want to do. But you have so many other things going on, you're not going to remember. And it's really unfair to put that pressure on yourself and to think that you can. I mean, maybe you can, but are you going to reliably remember and be cued to do something all the time? I give the example often of my own struggle to do something as simple as taking my antidepressants and my vitamins at the same time every day, or even taking them at all. The way that I've had to do this, I had to put them on a really pretty plate in the kitchen where I would see it in the morning by, where you guessed it, the coffee pot. That was my prompt. If something's, we say out of sight, out of mind, this is why. If you don't see it, if you're not prompted in the form of an alarm, a reminder on your phone, a notification, a phone call, you name it, you're not going to remember to do it. So put up post-it notes, do whatever you got to do, put the thing that you want to take or do front and center, but you gotta do the trigger. You got to prompt yourself. Okay. And also let me just quickly say one other thing. If you want to stop doing a behavior, remove the trigger and or make it harder to do. So we talked about capability, add friction to get yourself to stop doing something. All right. Final component here is satisfaction. This can take on different forms. It could be that you get an external reward. It could be like an attaboy or attagirl, pat on the back, a gift, money, you name it. Or it could also be that you avoid punishment, judgment, any type of pain. Both of these could be satisfaction. I do want to make something really clear though. Let's just say that, so like I say more bad words than I honestly should. I just shitted on myself. Okay. Let me rephrase. I would like to say fewer curse words. Okay. It's something I've like always been working on and just can never quite get there. And again, this is why I teach habits, because I need this stuff. But let's just say that my reward, if I can go 30 days without swearing, is that I get to go on a shopping spree at Nordstrom. Okay, that sounds pretty good, right? But it's actually not going to help me from the habit perspective. What I would actually be way more successful doing is instead, every time I am about to swear, but catch it and make a different choice not to, I do an internal celebration and I pat myself on the back or say, yeah, you did it. You picked another one. I know that this sounds kind of insignificant, maybe even stupid, but it really works because it hacks your brain's reward center. And the way that this works is when you feel good, when you have positive emotions, you are releasing dopamine. And if you do it as you remember to do a behavior or not do it in this case, while you are performing a desired behavior or immediately, and I mean like milliseconds after doing a behavior, what happens is your brain is like, oh, I got my hit of dopamine. What was I doing to get it? And that way it makes the link, it makes the association, and you're going to be so much more likely to wire this in as a habit because you've wired it in as being pleasurable. So yeah, the shopping spree at Nordstrom, that sounds really great, but it's too delayed. It's too far out for you, for your brain, for your reward center to tie that in with the behavior. A great example of this is anyone who has had a dog, you know, when you're training them, the moment that they do something you want them to do, you need to reward them, praise them, pet them, give them a treat so that they tie the positive behavior to the reward. I remember learning when I first got Daisy, if your dog has like an accident in the house and then you see it hours later, it does no good to punish them or say, you know, bad dog, because they don't have any idea what they're getting punished for. They're not linking it. Instead, you got to like catch them peeing or pooping on the floor and be like, no, 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 you know, whatever it takes to get them to stop doing that, because that is how they learn, oh, I can't do that. Otherwise, it's like the moment has passed and it ain't happening. So make sure you celebrate at the moment that you make the choice that you want, that you remember to do it, or immediately, like again, milliseconds after doing it. So those are the four components. Now you can play with these and adjust to see what would work. Again, I would always do ambition or the motivation and desire to do something as the last lever you pull. I would use capability as the primary lever. Make sure that you have a prompt to trigger or cue you or remind you to do it, and then celebrate when you do it. Super, super, super important. But yeah, leave ambition to last. It is truly last resort. So we're at 30 minutes. I could keep going, but I'm not going to. Like one of my best bosses I ever had, Tom Wright. Shout out to Tom Wright. This is when I was selling a specific product at Salesforce. And he would always say, don't spill all your candy in the lobby, right? We don't want to give you all the goods. But I feel like I gave you enough that you can really get rolling with behavior design. and then you can read the rest in the book. So the rest that's in the book, I give you specific examples around how ambition and capability, they have a relationship where one can make up for the other if they're in a high enough quantity and the other is low. So for instance, you know, how can two teenage girls in Oregon lift a 3,000 pound tractor? I talk about that example in the book and how a great deal of ambition or a desire to do something can make up for low capability, while high capability can make up for very low ambition and desire. I also talk about how you can unwind behaviors that you no longer want to do. I encourage you to not say you're breaking a habit. It's a misnomer. It's very inaccurate in terms of how you stop doing something. So we go through that. I walk you through the whole behavior design process in a lot more detail. So hopefully today's episode was helpful. The book will be out hopefully. I shouldn't say hopefully. It'll definitely be out in June. I just don't know if it's going to be early June, mid-June, late June. Things keep moving, which is one of the interesting parts about self-publishing a book. You don't have a publishing house that's like, okay, this is the do or die date. This is happening. Like, things can kind of be a bit fluid, which, you know, that's fine. At the end of the day, you're going to have a much better book. And I have to say, like, I don't want to toot my own horn. And I know that there's going to be people who read this book and think it sucks, but really, I think the vast majority of you, and thank you to those who have pre-ordered, the vast majority of you who read this book, I think are really going to like it. I read the whole thing cover to cover this weekend on you. If you're watching the video, you can see me holding this up, 169 pages, single spaced. So it's kind of long. But I got to say, like, I'm really proud of it. I think it's a good book. I think it's going to be very helpful. I think it's going to meet you where you are, wherever that might be, and that you're going to enjoy reading it, and you're going to enjoy who you become while you read it even more. So if you haven't pre-ordered yet, I'm going to do a few more signed copies on pre-order because I don't want to be signing and shipping hundreds of books. I've already sold more than I thought I would. So I'm going to be capping that here pretty soon. But you could visit alesiacitro.com/book to get your pre-ordered copy. And I will be back next week for the very short part 5 of this, which is ascend and amplify. That is part 5, stage 5 of the process. And it's one of the most satisfying and happy parts of this process. It's where you get to really stand back and say, damn, look how far I've come. And be really, really proud of it. So I'll see you back here next week. And then I've got a whole series of amazing interviews and conversations to share with you. Oh my gosh, I cannot wait for you to listen to what's coming. So with that, have a great day. If you got benefit from this episode, share it on the gram, share the link with a friend, whatever feels aligned. But I will see you back here next week. And thanks for listening.